The following podcast is brought to you on behalf of the Saracen Supporters Association and is not an official product of Saracens Limited. Content provided voluntarily by our guests and contributors are of their own opinion, which may change over time and should not be taken as fact, particularly as the podcast hosts are regularly talking drivel anyway. If you've got some drivel of your own you'd like to share, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Fezcast_SSA. You can search Facebook for the Fezcast, or you can email fezcast.ssa@outlook.com.
You're listening to the Fezcast.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 23 of season 3 of the Fezcast. And joining me tonight is Sam to discuss. Well, first of all, I'm going to have Roy a reply because I assume you listened to last week, Sam, and Barry and Matt giving me a bit of the rounds of the kitchen sink, didn't I?
I know, and I'm very happy to be here to witness your response live.
Well, yeah, absolutely. It's going to be fun. Well, we've got plenty of to talk about, not least Barry replicated Finbar Saunders and his double entendres last week. And but yeah, we've got a game to, or a couple of games to review for both Saracens men and women, which is going to be interesting for me because I've only seen highlights of both of them. Because I sat down on Sunday afternoon, put BT Sport on thinking, yeah, going to get to see Saracens Bristol, and they were showing some mid-table scrap from the West Country or something, and I'll go watch a film instead. Yeah, but also we could have talk a little bit about Jamie George and his head injury. Billy Vunipola and Jim Hamilton, we'll have a discussion about that. And also the ongoing furore about the tackle laws and everything. So where do we start? Well, let's start, shall we, with Jamie George and the head injury. And also Elliot Daly as well, who's obviously pulled out of the England Six Nations after getting an injury to his hamstring, which for those of us who filled in our prediction forms and put Elliot Daly down as top try scorer, has had a bit of a rethink on that one. But yeah. First of all, Elliot, I mean, he's played absolutely brilliant this year and gets back into the squad, and for this to happen, that's gutting, isn't it, Sam?
Massively. I've been singing his praises all year, as much as anyone has, if not more. I think he's actually been our best player, our standout player so far this year. I think he's one of the top five standout players in the league so far this year, probably. And it's just gutting for him because it's amazing, actually, isn't it? He spent quite a lot of time in the England squad when he wasn't actually on top form.
Yeah.
And then he gets back into form. He didn't get into the autumn international squad, which I thought was a bit of a weird one. Then finally we have a coach that actually knows how to pick players on form, and he gets back in, and it's just, you could see it in that game in Edinburgh. You could see it in his face. He knew. He was thinking about England, I think, more than Saracens there. But yeah, I'm gutted for him, absolutely gutted for him. And I'm gutted for us as well, to be honest, because yes, we were going to miss him for the Six Nations, but actually it's a more lengthy time out. And having somebody that has suffered a lot with hamstring injuries over the course of my amateur career, I know that they're not the easiest things to come back from. And I think they're definitely a confidence injury. You don't necessarily get that confidence back straight away in terms of going full pelt. And certainly one of his great assets so far for us this year has been cutting those lines and coming in from fullback. And yeah, I just hope that he makes a speedy recovery and we manage it properly and he comes back and he gets back into that form again, because we're going to need him into the back end of this season. It's going to be a tough one.
Well, absolutely. And I mean, yeah, just looking on the England point of view, and we will at the end of the show do a quick preview of the Six Nations and in particular the Calcutta Cup match. But I see Dan Kelly, the Tigers centre, has pulled out today as well. So there's a bit of an issue at centre positions. You've got Manu Tuilagi, who's made of glass. Ollie Lawrence could be covering two positions, and we could end up with Owen Farrell moving to 12 just purely because you need that position filled.
Yeah, well, it's a shame really that Andy Christie's Scottish, because he filled in nicely at centre for the last 10 minutes of the game on at the weekend. So, you know, he would have just been roped in, wouldn't he? So I don't know, maybe they'll just stick Benell there.
Yeah, could do a lot worse, couldn't they, than go that way? But there we go. Jamie George, we do have to have a quick word about the head injury. And I think Barry and Matt did cover it off without perhaps realising the fullest extent last week. But yeah, I mean, seems that the club doctors, medical staff made a bit of a rickets in that game, didn't they? And, you know, as much as we don't want to see people losing jobs or anything like that, these guys are paid money to recognise these situations. And, you know, we have seen people get reprimanded, dealt with, where they have made these big issues. And then we're going to go on and talk about tackling in a little while. But, yeah, it was it's not good, is it?
It's not, but I'm a great believer. If people get stuff wrong, sacking them is the stupidest thing you can do, because these people are more aware than anyone what they got wrong, and they're less likely to get it wrong again than somebody else coming in and starting from scratch. I think as a club, we're not the type of club anyway that will just get rid of a family member to just because of outside influence. I really hope that doesn't happen. There'll be training, there'll be internal stuff. Everyone's going to be fully aware of what happened. I mean, to be honest, you know, again, watching the game, I didn't venture up to cold Edinburgh, but, you know, watching the game, it was odd. And I think even the commentators maybe even mentioned it about the fact that he had gone off for the HIA, come back on, and then, you know, 2-3 minutes later, half time, and he doesn't return. It seemed a bit of a strange one. So at least he didn't play too much more, but yeah, it's errors are made. I think you made the point, Jez, a couple of weeks ago, that in any job you make mistakes. Okay, yeah, there are those that maybe it's in more important positions than others, but you know, mistakes do happen, and we've got to manage it properly. And I can't see people losing jobs over this. I think it's more of a just make sure it doesn't happen again, and let's learn from it and move on. And hopefully, you know, there hasn't been anything too serious from Jamie's perspective, and yeah, he's back fit and ready to go again soon.
Absolutely, indeed. Well, the other player who was mentioned last week on the first cast by Matt and Barry, in relation to perhaps moving on and all those sort of things, and Matt did say he was going to leave him alone and be a bit kind to him. Well, I'm not, because Billy Vunipola, Billy is a player and a person who obviously has deep thoughts, deeply held beliefs, and isn't afraid to voice them. And yet, I know, I think you might have mentioned it, Sam, we look for characters in the game and then bemoan people when they show a bit of character. But Billy really didn't help the cause when he went on Big Jim Hamilton's podcast. I mean, on two things. Number one, I know the hoops that we have to go through as the first cast to get people on from the club. And, you know, what we have to do, we have to make sure that when we do an interview with someone, it gets signed off by the club. We can't say anything too controversial. We have to present the club in a good light. And then Billy goes out there and says what he says, which just feeds the trolls. And I don't know what you've been like, Sam, but I spent most of the week, and I know I shouldn't, but I can't help it because I love the club. And, you know, you try and defend, you end up defending almost indefensible sometimes. Whether it be Owen Farrell, you know, he doesn't have a problem tackling and he gets sent off for a red card, or Billy Vunipola, you know, the club shows humility. You know, we accept the punishment we got over the salary cap, and then Billy comes out and goes, well, not really. It just doesn't help, does it, Sam?
Not at all. And, I mean, the fact is that we're talking about this, and we're just a bit shocked and surprised, because I think, as I've said previously as well, as a club, I do think that generally we're very good at this kind of stuff. You just alluded to it. It's not easy for us to get people on the show because the club are very, you know, rightly so. They want to make sure that nothing is out of their control in terms of the way that the club is perceived. And I'm sure things are a little bit different with old Jim, because obviously he's an ex-Saracens favourite, and actually, in general, I find a decent defender of the club, particularly when he's got to put up with Andy not so good next to him, just spouting crap half the time, because he genuinely just has a hatred for our club, and it's so obvious. But yeah, Billy, he's not done himself any favours. But the only thing I will say maybe in defence is it was obviously such a massive, difficult time for the club. And we know what we're like as fans. Like you say, sometimes we will defend the indefensible, because someone come up to me in the street and say whatever they like to me, they suddenly mention Saracens and I'm all over them, because I don't know, there's a passion there. And if anything, if let's put a little positive spin on it, it just shows how passionate he actually is about this club, that he's willing to put, he's willing to say those kind of things in a public space, knowing that he's going to get a kickback off it, because he just, you know, he's so passionate. And look, we all know, because as Saracens fans, we've done more research into what happened than anyone else.
Yeah.
And you're right, you get the Leicester trolls and the Gloucester trolls and the Exeter trolls, and they haven't done any research into it. They just see Saracens cheated. There you go, done. We know a lot of what happened behind the scenes, and we all, I think, generally believe as much as what we did was wrong. I think the treatment was probably a little overzealous. And was it overzealous because of our position, because of the fact we're not part of the old boys club, all those things? Yes. And Billy's just said it. And rightly or wrongly, maybe it wasn't the right place to do it. But I think he's probably voicing how a lot of people within the club do feel about how we were treated. And, you know, that's what he's done. And as I say, I kind of wish he hadn't. But if I'm am to take a positive from it, it shows that even though lots of people are talking about this being his last season, he clearly still blooming loves this club and probably doesn't want to go anywhere. It might not be his decision.
Well, absolutely, yeah. And I mean, that's the interesting thing, that the column inches about Saracens at the moment do surround Billy Vilipola and his future. And I mean, we've heard the rumour mills going, obviously there's Japanese clubs that are interested in clubs in France, but also apparently, according to one of the ruck.co.uk or one of those or rugby pals, whatever, apparently Pat Lam has been inquiring about his availability as well for Bristol, which would be an interesting one, because I mean, Bristol are one of those clubs that you look at and think if they've been more successful over the last 3 years, that they'd probably be under the fine tooth comb, as it were. You know, how are they going to afford someone of Billy Vilipola's quality, given that, you know, as Barry and Matt said last week, if he does go for a payday, it's a well-deserved payday. You know, on the field, he's been nothing but a Trojan for Saracens. And yeah, okay, I've had issue with a couple of things he said in the past, not just this week, but certainly his support of Israel Folau in the past left a nasty taste behind, as it were. But I mean, yeah, if he does go, he's going to go somewhere where he's going to earn a few more quid than he would do in the Premiership, I think. So, I mean, that's just throwing red herrings out there. But, yeah, it's a story that's going to rumble on and on and on, isn't it? And until the club actually come out and confirm, yes, he's off, or no, he's staying, then, you know, well, where are we with it? All right, let's finish up there. We'll come back after a word from one of our advertisers, and we'll discuss, I think we'll discuss the women's game next.
You're listening to the Fezcast, which is proudly sponsored by the Saracen Supporters Association, and I'm Alison Davis, one of the SSA committee. For a £10 annual subscription, the SSA provides our members with monthly newsletters, virtual and in-person player events, away match ticket allocations, and we organise pre-match gatherings at away matches. We sponsor men's and women's players, and we support the Saracens Foundation Track Club on behalf of our members. On top of all that, every year we have a seasonal SSA badge, which is exclusive to members. Where else can you get that much value for a tenner? Join now at membermojo.co.uk/SSA. Or come and see us on match day in the Oasis at the Stonex.
This is the Fezcast.
Well, welcome back to part two of the Fezcast with me and Sam. And the women, after a bit of a humbling against Exeter Chiefs, have come back with two fine wins. One against Worcester and then away at Bristol, which is the big game, isn't it? A really impressive performance against the two teams who perhaps are battling at the moment for that final playoff place towards the end of the season. I think it's important for Saracens women that they got that result, because, you know, with their Six Nations coming up as well, where Saracens are going to lose an awful lot of players, they needed that gap to develop, didn't they? And perhaps the top four is beginning to make a bit of form there, don't you think, Sam?
Yeah, I mean, look, great result for the girls. They did need it. You know, they did need it. It's been a real up and down season, and it's. Do you know what? I was thinking about this the other day, actually, that the women's season this year, I think that the organisers maybe need to have a little bit of a think about this, you know, next time there is a World Cup, because I think that the disruption of the World Cup and the lack of World Cup players playing in the league this year has been potentially quite badly managed. And we've certainly suffered massively from it. We've seen some of the results. And It just means that you can't get any consistency. I mean, look, it's great for the league that there isn't the two sort of runaway teams at the top like there usually is, which is good for the league. It's nice to see, you know, other teams like Exeter, Gloucester. You know, we people have been speaking about them pre-season. They're doing well, but you know, from our perspective, when you are losing the number of players that we are. And bringing a couple of new faces in and all that kind of stuff, it's clear that we've suffered probably as much as any team has, if not more than any other team. And it is a shame for our consistency, you know, moving forward as we grow our squad. We've been very fortunate over the last few years that we've been in and around, you know, the top of the league and winning it more often than not. And it's been a real tricky season for us. But there is. Something there that I think I'm not sure if the World Cup and the availability of players was managed maybe as well as it could have done. We've seen in the past in the men's game when there's a World Cup that sometimes there's like a delay in the start of the season a little bit more, and maybe that could have been worked in a little bit. I know there was cup games and all that sort of stuff, but yeah, I don't think it's quite there.
Well, yeah, it's an interesting point you make there, Simon. Is a point that's been brought up in previous Fezcasts. We're talking about the women's game where we discussed the idea where it was mooted that perhaps, you know, it's detrimental to the game and to clubs that all the best players are centred in one place. Mm. And is it possible that, you know, you may want to spread some players around to make the league more... you know, more even, as it were. Okay, yeah. How do you turn around to someone who lives and works in London and say, right, okay, you're now playing for Durham or Sale or Worcester or whoever? I mean, there's an awful lot of things got to be thought about around that. But the one thing we have seen with all of our stars away, as it were, our internationals away, that have brought through other players who have actually stepped up. And have developed, which perhaps if that World Cup hadn't have happened, those players may not have got that opportunity. So, you know, perhaps it is something that, you know, I don't think it should be happening immediately, but over the next period of time, as players come to end of contracts, that maybe they're moved around and it brings up. You turn around to the likes of Exeter who have brought in Americans and Canadians like they're going out of fashion, perhaps say you need to bring through a few more local players, whatever, but maybe it is a template. I think you're right in so much as this is the first time it's really happened like this. And, you know, like you said about people learning from the Jamie George incident, you know, the people who run the game need to sit down and learn the lessons, say, this is what we've done good this season. This is what we need to improve for next season or next time the World Cup happens. And perhaps, you know, it does... If nothing else, it promotes a conversation around it and gets people. And like in any organisation, the moment you just accept the accepted wisdom is the moment the game stagnates or the business stagnates and dies. So, yeah, you know, the fact that we're throwing ideas out there, as much as I doubt the RFU listen to us, and I mean... they should do when it comes to tackling next up, because we can discuss that in the next one. But, yeah, I mean, it's good to talk, as they say, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And do you know what? It's funny. You mentioned the Exeter situation with them sort of just buying in all these other players. And you know, look, they bonded well quite quickly, which, you know, doesn't always, it's not, you know, just buying in a load of stars isn't necessarily the way to win, but it's worked for them this year. But I think, you know, the women's game can actually learn from what I believe is one of the biggest oversights in the men's game, which is the complete, well, I think the RFU and the PRL will probably disagree with me, but they don't look at ways of truly incentivizing clubs to utilize their academies and put their real focus in their academies. And maybe the women's game could learn from that and actually do the opposite and be a bit of a guiding light to the men's game in that regard, and really push players to invest in their academies, look at local schools, you know, do coaching sessions, all that kind of stuff to bring through the local talent that's in that area. Because obviously that's only going to be good for our game in England and the international team as well, where then hopefully you then get actually a bit more of a split of international players around the country, because, you know, they're bringing through those players that are going to want to be, you know, playing for those clubs and not wanting to go and play for any other club because it's their home club that they've been at their entire life. So, again, maybe something that can be learned from that and would only be good for the future of the game, I think, for the women.
Well, absolutely. And I mean, it's brought home when you look at the forthcoming fixtures for the Saracens men. In you know, we haven't got a game now until the 19th of February. As you say, you know, what's happening? And we'll bring it in when we talk about the Bristol game in relation to the amount of game time that the fringe players get and how prepared that leaves them for the big matches when they're suddenly called upon. But yeah, we'll discuss that towards the end of the show. Let's stop that there, and then we'll come back and we'll hit the 40 subjects of tackles, and I shall answer a couple of Barry's queries from last time out.
Hi, Alex Osterbury here, Director of Rugby for Saracens Women. You're listening to the Saracens Fezcast.
This is the Fezcast.
Well, yeah, okay. Well, welcome back to part three. And yeah, it's an ongoing thing, isn't it? The whole, well, I mean, the RFU in their infinite wisdom seem to have completely cocked up. All right, I'm going to play devil's advocate here because I think, essentially speaking, they're doing the right thing in the wrong way. Okay, there is a conversation to be had around tackling, but they've just gone a bit ham-fisted. They've not spoken to anybody. They've not communicated, and you'll know in business, Sam, the most important thing you need to do is have communication. It's the same on the field. You know, a team that doesn't communicate on the field will screw up time after time after time, and it's the same thing that happens when you've got a team on the outside. If they don't communicate, they get things wrong. There is an issue with tackling. And they do need to tackle the tackle, as it were. That sounds good, doesn't it? Tackle the tackle. There you go. This will be the title of my paper that I present to the RFU on the back of this. But yeah, the big problem is the law is already there. Okay, you're not allowed to take somebody's head off. Simple as. Okay, the way to ensure you don't take somebody's head off is to coach people to tackle lower and to tackle correctly and to tackle safely. And herein lies the problem. It's not the tackling per se that is the issue. It is the way it is coached. And this stems from the language we use, whether it be you and me on the Fezcast, whether it be Lawrence Delalio and Ben Kay and Jim Hamilton, whoever on commentary, Stuart Barnes or Stephen Jones writing in the newspapers, and the coaches themselves. The language around tackling is always domination, big hits, first up hits, speed, whatever. It's all about collision and everything like that. And once you start talking that way, that's what happens when the tackle happens. So if we can drag it back from that, that's your first step.
Yeah, it's, do you know what? Like, this is tough for me because as a player, you know, I very poorly modelled myself on Johnny Wilkinson as a young fly half. He was my idol. And Johnny was known, he's probably one of the first fly halves in the game to, you know, really kind of step up. There was that big one. Was it Untama come up? No, it wasn't. What was his name? Betson came out the back of the scrum that one time and Johnny absolutely destroyed him. And that's one of my favourite memories of rugby, watching that. And I remember even playing. Sometimes you'd get more of a kick out of absolutely destroying your opposite number than you might do even scoring a try. And you're right. It's just ingrained in us. Even even at the weekend, there was a tackle. I can't remember who made it. I think it might have been Christie. Like real, you know, you felt it in the stands. Bang! It was, and the whole all the crowd suddenly, it was very flat on Saturday, and the crowd was raised because of it. And it's hard because there's a real fine line between a really good quality hit that reminds you of the old days versus something that is very unsafe and needs to be wiped out of the game. And there is a mass, it's a really fine margin. And, you know, what the RFU have decided to do is remove the fine margin and make it the biggest margin that you can possibly get, which is, nope, you've now got to tackle around the waist, which essentially means that the game is ruined because as long as you can offload, you win. You basically, that's it. This just becomes an offloading game. One of my favourite tweets about it recently was Sonny Bill Williams saying, any amateur teams in England fancy an old New Zealander, I'm available. Because he was the offload king, wasn't he? You know, and that's what it is. And it will change the game. It's also been, again, you alluded to it, poor communication. No one likes being told what to do, especially when it comes out of nowhere. And the RFU basically came out and said, right, you're all doing this now. And everyone went, hang on a second. No one told us. We don't like this. So obviously there was going to be a negative. And then it comes out that they actually trialed this, you know, in the championship, whatever it was, a few years back. And it was ultimately decided that it was more dangerous to have this height restriction on tackles. And so they've haven't even looked at the evidence as to what they're trying to do. So complete cock up on a multitude of levels, least of all communication, and quite rightly, and I'm actually very glad that they've eaten a bit of humble pie of the RFU. They've come out, they've actually apologised for it and said, we handled it badly, we're going to go back and review. And I really hope they do go back and review and, you know, come out with something a little bit better. You're right, the tackle needs to be tackled, but not that low.
Well, the interesting thing is, I mean, I'm going to take a slight issue with something you said there about offloading game and everything's going to ruin the game of rugby. I don't think it will do. The biggest problem with tackling is the profusion, given that, you know, Kevin Sinfield is now the England defence coach. But the profusion of rugby league coaches has turned rugby union basically into rugby league, i.e. we take six tackles and then kick the ball away because the ball's not kept alive. Now, when I coach kids... Okay, and I will tell you this story now, in the knowledge that you're all going to turn around and call me an absolute raving hypocrite here, but I don't mind that because the important thing for me in the game of rugby when coaching rugby is that you find space, you open up space, you create space. So I did two things with the first, when I took a team over, I did two things. I asked them a simple question. First question was, what is the best way of defence? And you'll have all these kids sitting there giving it blitz this or that, you know, wolf pack that or whatever. And then one kid who immediately becomes a captain turns around and says attack. Okay. Now, I had a coach who turned around to me when I was a captain and said, what you do is you win the toss and you elect to receive the ball. You receive the ball, you keep the ball alive, you go up the other end, put it over the white line, score 5 points, come back and repeat. It's a simple, simple game. And the second thing I used to do was I'd turn around and I would line up the players in two lines looking at each other and I'd ask them what they see. And the kids would go, I see a man in front of me, I see a man in front of me. And then the lad who said attack, who's my captain, turns around and says, I see a gap between those two players. Now, a player that I used to love watch playing was Yannick Jozion, who was brilliant at going into the middle of a gap, bringing two players onto and then offloading out the back. Okay, it'll make the game more exciting. Yes, you might see more tries and everything, but it will make the game more exciting. The reason I call myself a hypocrite, which will bring me on to the other point about tackling and why they need to deal with a tackle and why they need to deal with it better than what they have done, is that one of the teams, they came and watched me play a game. And after the game, the captain came up to me quite sheepishly, actually. He turned around and he said, Jez, he said, I've got a question to ask you. He says, you know, when we go out on a Sunday morning, you coach us and you talk about space and you talk about opening up space and putting people into space and all of this. So every time you got the ball, you just looked at the biggest bloke you could have run into him. And my answer to him was, he says, I'm teaching you how to play the game, not why I play the game. Yeah. But this does bring me on. The trick I used to do, and I was terrible for it, I used to get away with from it. You lead with your elbow. And as the elbow goes into the chest, it rises up and takes the chin. If you do it right, nobody could turn around. And you see it a lot. And what you're seeing now is because people have been told to tackle low, the attacking players, and Barry made this point last week, are going in low and leading with their heads and everything like that. And that's, and you'll see it, that coaches will coach players to do that, knowing full well that they're going to get penalties and whatever. And the coaches will endanger their players by telling them to do this. In the same way as I believe Exeter Chiefs players are coached to throw themselves at ankles, that should be eradicated from the game. So, yeah, we've just got to drag it round back a bit and just have a really mature conversation about it and just say, look, the responsibility here is on all players, whether you're carrying the ball or whether you're stopping the ball carrier. But the game of rugby is a game of the ball moving. And the more the ball moves, the better the game will be.
I agree with you. I think what I meant when I said about the offloading thing is it becomes, like you said, it opens up more opportunities to find other dangerous ways of dealing with those kind of things. And what actually happens is I think a lot of the time we talk about control. You go back to talking about rugby league. When I first started playing rugby league, the word control from a tackle perspective was one that they will use a lot because it becomes a very coachable part of the game. And actually, incredibly, because I think there is a bit more structure sometimes to rugby league defence and attack, it actually reduces the danger because the level of coaching that actually the detail even at an amateur level that goes into it is incredibly high in terms of position and movement of other of players and it's all done in a very in a with safety in mind. And you do see a few more higher tackles sometimes in rugby league. I will admit that, but generally speaking, if you actually watch the tackle situation, it's managed in a slightly different way. I think with rugby union being more of an open game where there is more of a chance for just, you know, play what's in front of you, not really any kind of, you know, tools or whatever, because it's open play. When that happens, that's actually where you're going to see more injuries because things are not as controlled. And I think the more offloads that we have, yes, it makes for a greater spectacle, but it also brings out the, oh, I've just popped my arm out to quickly grab him because that's the only thing I could think of doing. And you take his head off whilst you do it. And I think we see a lot of that as well. So as you say, there's not at the moment, they haven't come up with the right solution. And coming out with what they did, that wasn't the right solution. And also the one thing that was weird is like, it's how, oh, it's just going to be amateur players. It's not going to be the pros. The pros can still, you know, kick the crap out of each other. But the amateurs have to play tag rugby, essentially, which is just odd. But there needs to be more thought put into this. And unfortunately at the moment, as we know, thought and the RFU are two parts of a sentence that don't seem to meet too often.
Well, true, absolutely. And I mean, obviously, the other issue in the professional game is the hits are much harder because most of the time, they spend 3-4 hours a day in the gym and they're all 27 stone. And yeah, certainly wasn't like that in our day. I mean, and the other thing about tackling very quickly, I will say, is, you know, a lot of this came from when they decided that lifting people above the perpendicular and everything was dangerous, when actually it's not quite as dangerous as perhaps you think about. You know, and you mentioned Johnny Wilkinson's tackle on Serge Betson. The one tackle I will go back to is Mick the Munch Skinner on Eric Schomp in the it was World Cup quarterfinal, wasn't it, 1991, where, you know, he just picked Eric Schomp up, drove him back, and then just went, right, you're in the ground, I'll turn you into a plough. And, and we all got up from it and everything. And, you know, I mean, there are plenty of tackles like that. I think Josh Lucy's on Matt Rogers, wasn't it, in the World Cup? Was just, you know, outstanding. And those tackles have gone from the game and we're starting hitting higher because you're not allowed to lift the leg and put them in, you know. And perhaps have a look at that. Bring those ones back. George North as well, when he picked up whoever it was in the line, you know, bring those tackles back. There wasn't too much wrong with those. And I'd rather see that. But just going to do a quick bit here now, really, about the Six Nations. That's coming up, Sam. And first of all, anybody wants to enter the prediction game that I'm running, just email me, sixnationsgame4mnd@outlook.com. And the four is a number four. We're all entered it, haven't we, Sam? And we'll have our little mini league going between us to find out absolutely how much we don't know about rugby. But Calcutta Cup on the weekend, and we did say earlier on that their people are falling over rapidly, and that, you know, you and me might end up in the centres as it goes. But confident for England against Scotland? So are we going in with a level of confidence that, I mean, I've said this on a number of occasions, I think Steve Borthwick's got a bit of a free pass, that if it does go tits up, then it's all the Aussie Oik's fault. And if he doesn't, well, you know, if he does do well, it's a fresh breath of fresh air playing Owen Farrell as a 10, obviously, in his proper position, unless all the centres do go. Unless there is no other centres. But yeah, I mean, I'm fairly confident, and England starts the tournament is probably the one that Borthers would actually have wanted. You know, you've got two home matches against Scotland and Italy, and then away at Wales. I mean, you could be going into the France game at home looking at a Grand Slam.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves. I'm always concerned playing Scotland, because like Wales, I find those two teams always play the best game usually of their tournament against us. So we have to play against a better Scotland than anyone else will. You know, they got their talisman back with his fin up, and playing some half decent rugby. I think it's too difficult to call, really, because we've got no idea which England team's actually going to turn up. There is the argument that first game, new coaching setup, loads of passion back, you know, English coaches, etc. But let's not forget, these guys have had so little time with these players to get them prepared. And international rugby is a game of very, very fine margins. And if we don't get it right, I think we're going to get shown up by the Scots, and who on their day have shown recently they can beat some of the best sides in the world. So there's a lot of talent in that Scottish team. You know, we saw it against Edinburgh last week. There's a lot of players that will be playing across the road from that game. And we've got a ton of injuries that are going to be difficult to fill last minute. I think that a couple of weeks ago, the coaching staff probably would have known roughly who their starting 15 was going to be. And that has had to have changed, you know, over the last 48 hours or so. So I think it's too difficult to call. For me, in terms of aspirations for England, I think finishing third behind the two best teams in the world at the moment would be a good, solid campaign. Anything more than that would be astonishing, quite frankly. And let's all just hope we don't go fall below Wales. Anything, if we're above Wales and Scotland, I'm happy.
Yeah, that's fair enough, I suppose. Well, we'll wait and see it. As I say, we'll work out when we see everybody's predictions and everything, and we'll keep you, everybody who wants to listen in, to see how badly or how well we're doing. That'll be on there as well. So, well, yeah, right. We need to talk about Saracens versus Bears at the Stone X. And also, we need to have a chat about Sweet Caroline as well, I think, in the next part. So we'll have a word from one of our advertisers, and then we'll come back and discuss that in our final part.
Hi guys, I'm Alex Linton and I'm a proud Looseheads ambassador.
I'm Sydney Gregson and I'm a Looseheads ambassador.
We're a rugby mental health charity working to tackle the stigma. You can find us at Looseheads on all social media channels or at looseheads.co.uk.
The Looseheads mission is to place a mental health lead at every rugby club. Get in touch now to find out more. Take care and enjoy the rest of the podcast.
Enjoy the rest of the pod.
Well, yeah, welcome back. And time to discuss Saracens versus Bristol Bears. But before we do that, we do need to pay tribute to the next member, the fifth member of the 300 Club, the brilliant, fantastic Jackson Ray. And I don't know if anybody's seen it, but there's a brilliant article in the Daily Mirror, I think it was, which isn't a paper often known for its support of rugby union, but a brilliant article where Jackson, a player who perhaps should have had at least a go internationally. You know, if James Haskell could get 70-odd caps, I'm sure Jackson Rae, who was around at the same time, was deserving of at least a try or not. You know, he certainly goes into the best 15 never to have played international rugby, I think. You know, and he's very honest in saying he probably wouldn't have got a 300 appearances as Saracens if he had played international rugby. But he didn't, so he's, you know, and I think it was very telling that he turned around and said, you know, I don't have regrets. My Premiership finals, my European finals are my internationals. And it was a wonderful little interview, I think.
Yeah, I'm such a big fan of Jackson Rae. I think he's, you know, he embodies everything that we love about this club. He works, his work rate in games is phenomenal. And I think, you know, I think we've certainly seen over the maybe the last season and a half that he is sort of maybe dropping off a little bit now as he's getting on a bit. But he's the kind of guy, you know, you want these people around. You want these guys around. The guys that, I mean, look, on Saturday, and we will come to it, you know, in a bit, which was just horrifying at times to watch. He was actually a shining light because of the effort. You know, you could see him rallying the rest of the team. And yeah, look, couldn't ask for a greater player to represent our club. And who knows, you know, see how many more games he gets under his belt. See if he catches up with Goody one day. That'll be interesting because I think Goody will finish before him. So we'll see. But he could end up being our most ever capped player at some point.
Well, indeed, yeah. I mean, his contract is up at the end of the season. But I mean, we've already talked about Billy Vunipola. You know, if Billy does go at the end of the season, okay, we brought in Tom to be his like-for-like replacement almost. But, you know, Billy, the difference between Billy and Tom will leave a bit of money in the cap, as it were, you would hope, that perhaps, you know, you can give Jackson a contract. It won't be what he's been used to, but I think, as you say, you know, like you talk about bleeding red when you cut your arm, which is still one of the funniest comments we've had on it. I think he's the same. He bleeds black and red, doesn't he? I mean, he's a Saracens boy through and through. And also, in a squad full of supporters of Arsenal and Tottenham, by the sounds of it, he's a hammer as well. So he definitely is up on the top of my list, being a fellow happy hammer. But yeah, no, you're right. Absolutely. He was a shining light in the game against Bristol Bears, which we must go on to and say, you know, I was looking forward to watching it Sunday afternoon, wasn't it? Or whenever it was.
Saturday
afternoon, sorry. And then didn't watch it. Watched Operation Mincemeat instead on a film. It's a good film, actually. Really enjoyed that. But yeah, I mean,
well, to be honest, it was almost Operation Mincemeat at the Stone X as well. So,
Yeah, I mean, Bristol really did bring a game to us, didn't they?
Do you know what? I said at halftime, I said, it's a good thing we're playing Bristol today because anyone else would be absolutely slaughtering us because Bristol were rubbish as well. The first half was one of the worst halves of rugby I've ever watched. It really was. There was just nothing about it. No skill, no determination from either side, no real, you know, quality shown at all. It really was that drab. And you could feel it in the stadium. Just everyone seemed to be watching it in disbelief going, what's actually going on here? I think Mark McCall said after the game that, you know, there were actually some players that were available that decided, no, we're deciding this game is going to be one where we give more squad players a go. I think in hindsight, I mean, look, we won the game, but in hindsight, maybe we fielded a few too many. You know, there was, and I can understand maybe that we decided to, you know, leave the likes of Tompkins on the bench to, you know, to come on and give us that impetus. impetence is what it was in the first half. And that kind of, I didn't think that worked. But yeah, we were exceptionally subpar. And it was actually quite incredible to suddenly go in the last 10 minutes, hang on, what's happened here? And we just completely, you know, changed everything. And got in for a win, which we wouldn't have got against any other team on Saturday. So we were very lucky that we were playing as poor a Bristol team as you're ever going to see as well, who, of course, were missing a couple of players themselves. But yeah, a very disappointing afternoon. I think the players will be disappointed with themselves. I think the coaching team will be disappointed with themselves. But a win's a win. We still managed our continued sponsorship of defibrillators.com and managed a last-minute win. Also, I have to say, though, the Francois Huchard, who scored the try, I was convinced he's already played for us. And everyone kept saying it was his debut. I'm certain he's come on and played for us. And I can't.
Yes, no.
I was really shocked.
I think you must be mixing him up with somebody else there. But
I thought he even scored a try. I was thinking, he scored two tries in the last minute now. And I'm thinking, where did that come from? I don't know. But well played him for coming on and scoring that try and finishing it off.
But it's interesting you say, you know, you talk about fringe players and everything. And again, this is the criticism we have to make of the way the leagues are. You look at some of those players that are fringe players who've come in. And I mean, I know you've had your concerns about Manu Vinopola, and I do think that standoff is a position that we do need to look at for next season to strengthen, to have some kind of backup for Owen Farrell when he's away on international duty. But then again, I feel sorry for Manu because he's played, what, 3 games all season. You know, you can't expect a lad to come in. I mean, he's just completely and utterly undercooked. And you can see that. You know, likewise, Kitchener's come in. You know, he's done a manful job as best he can, but he's played 20 minutes or something daft. Theo Dan's had a little bit more of some game time. But again, the last 2 or 3 games, he's been coming on as back row, and then suddenly he's back in at hooker. These lads need, you know, and at the end of the day, you're paying Manu Vinopola a decent wage to sit around in the gym and carrying tackle bags, it seems, at the moment. And either these players have got to go out on loan and have dual registration, or my personal way of looking at it would be to say that Saracens are able to put a team out in the third level that is under 23s or something, you know, and that they are restricted in the amount of games that they can play for the senior side because they're playing down there. But if needed, they can say, right, you can have 5 games a year for Saracen seniors, but you have a vast majority. And that would then give support, you know, that if you're playing at Henley, for argument's sake, and you're going to come up against Saracens under 23s, it's going to put some bums on their seats because you're looking at the future of the game potentially. And there's a Theo Dan who's played some Premiership games, or there's a not even a player who's played some Premiership games. We've got to find a way to give these kids some exposure, because otherwise you're just going to turn around with Scots at 30 and there's loads of kids. What are they going to do?
They're
good enough to play at the higher level, but they don't get exposures, so they don't look good enough to play at the higher level. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think two things on that. Number one, I completely agree with you in terms of 10 being a problem position. I've said it for a couple of years now. What I really don't understand is why we're not utilising the fact that we had Montpellier's best player a couple of years ago, who played 10 for them all year, back playing 13. Okay, Lazowski is a great 13. I think he's one of the most underrated players in our team, actually. But he also is a very, very, very able debutant at 10. And he's a bit younger than the next best thing, which is Goody. Yeah. So why not utilise him there? And actually, what I said after the game, when we had a quick beverage at Mill Hill afterwards, was actually, could Manu Vinopola do a job at 13? And I think he might actually, without having the responsibility in his shoulders, because honestly, I don't think anyone could say any different. On Saturday, he was being babysat by Alex Goode for most of the game. Goody was behind him very frequently, barking orders in his ear. So he was basically just being shepherded round by Goode anyway. So, you know, why not? He's got skill. He's got good hands. He's got good vision. He's, you know, maybe not the quickest, but he's got, you know, he's can be quite elusive when he runs. He showed that a couple of times actually on Saturday, and the best bits of his play were doing that. Maybe he's a 13 waiting to happen, and maybe it's the opportunity we go, well, actually, let's get let's get Lazowski back playing a bit of 10, because he's actually a very, very good player. And that's what I'd be doing. But on your second point, for me, the RFU have just got to stick their hand in their pocket and they've got to fund the second reserve league. We've got to go back to the A League and we've got to have the Saracens Storm playing Bath United and all that sort of jazz again, because since we haven't had that, the game has had problems of having all these players, as you say, good enough to be playing, you know, top level championship or bottom level premiership, but not getting any game time. And then coming in completely cold, having a crap game because they are coming in cold, and it knocks their confidence. And you know, then maybe they end up on the pile, and they don't get any more games. So for me, that's what's got to happen. Because you need these players being together. We saw it in the cup this year. All those players that were effectively going to go and play down at Ampthill for a season, having to be roped back into playing cup rugby because we were missing so many players to injury, etc. And you know, we got shown up very, very frequently during that competition through not having enough quality and not having enough togetherness. And I think the only way you're doing that is by making sure that A League is happening, maybe a reduced A League. But even if you're playing, you know, 10 games a year, we could do a North and South Conference, for goodness sake. And you know, the winner of each one plays in a final at the end of the season. At least they're getting some games. And for me, that's the only obvious choice here, is because we need those players playing together as well as playing.
Well, absolutely. And I think the biggest problem with the RFU is that there are people who know the cost of everything but the value of nothing. And that is what drives them, and PRL exactly the same. And I think it's about time they came and spoke to you and me, Sam, and let us take over and deal with it, because I think we'd get it sorted, wouldn't we?
I just don't have much time for it. That's the problem.
I mean, the lads have got a couple of weeks off. I mean, the next game is at Welford Rose, or the day before my birthday, indeed, 19th of February. I'll be running a
Birmingham. I thought you were going to say 19th birthday then, Jess.
I know it won't be. It's actually my 51st. That day I will be running the Birmingham Half Marathon because of a nut job like that. But, yeah, you know, there we go. What we do have is we're just waiting on a bit of confirmation for next week, which will be going live on the 8th of February. Hopefully we'll have one of the Saracens women joining us. They're queuing up. We've got a list of names of people who actually want to come on. Joe Peake's done an absolutely fantastic job of getting names in the hat and everything. I can only assume it's Matt's matinee good looks that is attracting them all to the show. And yeah, I quickly mentioned Matt's very happy because obviously Sweet Caroline wasn't played immediately after the game, but a bit later on. Although if you go on Sarri's fan forum and various things like that, they're not very happy that Sweet Caroline. I think Matt might be in a minority, a very small minority of people who don't like giving it so good at the end of the game. But you know, there you go. Matt's happy anyway. But yeah, so that will be next week. And Ollie at Saracens is lining me up with a super interview. I can't say too much at the moment, but the men are away for a week. They've got a couple of weeks off now, so nobody's around. They're giving them a bit of a break and time with the families and whatever. But when they come back, we're going to have a pretty good interview lined up, hopefully. Touching wood and all sorts and lucky rabbit feet and everything like that. But yeah, that's all to look forward to. All remains, Sam, is to say thank you for your time and everything. And yeah, look forward to speaking to everybody. Thank you for listening in to this week's Fezcast. Cheers.
Thanks.
This is the Fezcast.